Good morning, everyone. Lesson 274, Living with Shiva. Nonviolence has long been central to the religious traditions of India, especially Hinduism, Buddhism, and Jainism. Religion in India has consistently upheld the sanctity of life, whether human, animal, or in the case of the Jains, elemental. There developed early in India an unparalleled concern for harmony among different life forms, and this led to a common ethos based on the non-injuriousness and the minimal consumption of natural resources. In other words, to compassion and simplicity. For Homo sapiens is to survive his present predicament, he will have to rediscover these two primary ethical values. Then skipping slightly forward. In order to understand the pervasive practice of nonviolence in Hinduism, one must investigate the meaning of life. Why is life sacred? For India's ancient thinkers, life is seen as the very stuff of the divine, an emanation of the source, and part of a cosmic continuum. Then we have some other material by Gurudeva. Sutra 3 relates to that. Seeing Shiva's energy in all, Shiva's devotees bask contentedly in Shiva consciousness. Seeing the pure life energy in every person, animal, bird, reptile, fish, insect, plant, tree, and even microscopic intelligence as Supreme God Shiva himself. So there's a beautiful Tamil word, uyakuyir, which our Tamil lexicon defines as God, who is the soul of the soul, or life of life. God Shiva is the life of your life. So life and soul are the same word, uyir. And one of my favorite verses from the Tirumandiram relates to that. Being the life of life is splendorous jnana worship. Beholding the light of life is great yoga worship. Giving life by invocation is external worship. Adoration that displaces anger is charya worship. It's an interesting verse. Our original translator of the Tirumandiram, B. Natarajan, fudged on the last verse. I don't know why. Made it sound very different. Something like tending puja is charya. But it's starting out with the basics and ending up with the most advanced. And the last line reads, in Tamil, Sayikadai Nesam Shiva Pusayame. So actually, the translation we now have nicely translates it. Adoration that displaces anger is charya worship. So that's the Sayikadai. Our translator, Sabaratnam, if you've read his translations, different translators have different approaches to translating. His is, you need to understand what it means. So he'll put everything you need to know to understand what it means into the translation. So even though it just says adoration that displaces anger is charya worship, this is how he renders it. The worship of Shiva pertaining to the charya path is to be with pure and spontaneous love, which wards off anger, lust, and other such vices, and which renders fitness to the devotees to do services without expecting any benefit or reward. So he pulls all that out of that one verse there. But you know what it means. You really know what it means. And it's, again, it's a beautiful part of Gurudeva's teachings that generally we talk about when it comes to the chakras. In lots of teachings, the emphasis is on, well, let's awaken the higher chakras. Talk about the chakras. The first sentence will be about awakening the higher chakras, right? But the first sentence in Gurudeva is, well, wait a second here. Let's close off the lower ones first. So this is that idea. You know, we have to deal with anger. Anger is a major issue that, what would you say? It kind of destroys devotion. You get angry and there your devotion goes. You know, anger needs to be seriously faced and controlled. And quite often it's not talked about, but Gurudeva was never shy to talk about what needed to be talked about. So he talks a lot about anger. And in some of my talks, I give the example of the really devout person who goes to the temple, so devotional and all, just looks perfect, and then goes home and yells at the wife and kids. Not the way to do it, of course. You know, you don't want a dual standard. The home should be just like the temple, and your behavior in the home should be just like your behavior in the temple. Then the next one, giving life by invocation is external worship. So that means conducting puja. It's the kriya, pada in our tradition. We not only attend puja, but we eventually learn to conduct puja. And the idea of invocation, avahana is the word, avahana, stavana. So we're giving life by invoking. We're giving life in the sense of bringing the deity into the murti. So through our external worship, we're giving life. Avahana, see what Sabaratnam says here. The external worship belonging to the kriya path is to perform the rituals such as installation of the image of Shiva, invoking the Lord, and so on. Very straightforward. Perform the rituals. Then we get into yoga. Beholding the light of life is great yoga worship. You'll remember that Gurudeva describes the inner light as caused by friction. Two things striking each other. You get a spark, you strike two stones together, you get a spark. So this is like that. Two things are coming together. One is otic energy and the other is actinic energy, or the life. Actinic energy means same, another word for uyir or life. So when they come together, or that part of your consciousness where they're both present, you see light. If you go deeper, there's no light. Your actinic force by itself does not have light if you go into it deeply enough, but when you're conscious of both actinic and otic force, then you're beholding the light of life. So let's see what Sabaratnam says. The yoga-based worship is to be in one-pointed concentration on the chosen form of Shiva or formless Shiva, who is the inner light of the souls. Okay? Very good. Then we get being the life of life is splendorous jnana worship. So being the life of life means it's who you think you are. You're not beholding. Beholding is a dualism, right? I am seeing the inner light. I is over here and the inner light's over there. But this is being the life of life. So that means you're identifying with it. There's only one thing. You and the life of life are the same thing. That's jnana. The knowledge-based worship is meditating on the Lord with a conviction that Shiva is the inner soul of each and every soul. Very nice. One of the stories I developed, try and relate to this, relates to the idea of Shiva's doing it all. What is it, Sarvam Shiva Seyal, something like that? Shiva's doing it all. It's about a computer. So if you imagine the computer had self-awareness, it thought of itself as a being. And of course, one of the challenges of being a being is pride. And the computer is so smart, it can do all these things, right? It can calculate spreadsheets, it can handle word processing, it can do a database, it can go out on the internet, it can do all these things. So if a computer had self-awareness, it can be very proud of all its abilities. But something we have here, quite common, is we lose electricity, right? So what happens when the electricity goes off? What can the computer do? Can't do anything, right? And sometimes when we lose electricity, you see the monks wandering around. They can't do anything. Almost everything we do is related to the computer. The point being, it's the electricity that's doing it, right? The electricity is causing the computer to be able to do something, and the electricity is doing it all. And likewise, you know, when we look at ourselves, we tend to think, oh, I have all these abilities, but it's actually Shiva as the life within us that's doing it all. So Shiva's doing it all as the life of our life, and it's a wonderful meditation to try and back away from the sense that I am doing it into the sense that Shiva's doing it. And it can help in when things aren't happening the way you want them to happen. It's one of the biggest challenges individuals face is when things aren't going the way you want them to go. And you're objecting to life. Life is not happening the way it was supposed to today. You're objecting to it. And that can lead to other emotions. But if you're able to accept what's going on as Shiva's dance, Shiva's doing it all, then there's a surrender and a ability to flow with it and work through it in a more positive way. And there's one more idea that relates. Comes from the publisher's desk. I want to see God, suggestions of where and how to look. You remember that one? Well, the first, I'll review the four ways of seeing God. Then it's the second one we're focusing on. First way is in a great teacher. That's the easiest way to see God, right? Is in a great teacher. We're all people-oriented, so we see certain energy emanating from a great teacher. Second way is, the one we're going to look at in depth here, is seeing the life in the eyes of any and everyone. So you're seeing God as the life within someone. Third way is in the temple murti, and the fourth way is in meditation. So this is the second way. Another way to see God, which is a little more difficult but still easy to do, is to look deeply into the eyes of another person. Look beyond the personality. Go deeper than his or her intellect and see the pure life energy, which is God. The great saying, Mahavakya, that describes this approach to experiencing the divine is the Tamil word, Uyukuyir, God is the life of our life. This practice does not stop with people, but should also include trying to see the life energy in trees, birds, and animals. This is because God is our life. God is the life in all beings. Becoming aware of this life energy in all that lives is becoming aware of God's presence within us. Beautiful verse from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad elucidates this concept. He who knows God as the life of life, the eye of the eye, the ear of the ear, the mind of the mind, he indeed comprehends fully the cause of all causes. In Hindu culture, every time we greet another person with the traditional gesture of namaskar, we have the opportunity to practice looking deeply enough into his or her eyes to see God within as the life of their life. This is fulfilling the deepest meaning of namaskar, which means I greet God in you. What's very interesting, we get all kinds of individuals visiting here. Hindus, those who hold Hindu beliefs, and those who don't hold any Hindu beliefs. And it's very interesting how those who don't hold any Hindu beliefs greet you. They don't see God in you. You know, they're seeing you as a person. I've experienced it many times. Say, oh. Well, you know, those who hold Hindu beliefs or are Hindus, you know, they greet you in a certain way and they see God in you and others don't. So it's a very, as it says, in Hindu culture. So it's very, very much a Hindu idea that God is within the person you're greeting. So thank you very much. Om Namah Shivaya.